It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure today to welcome into the studio everybody. We have Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good to be here, Mike.
And we have Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Hi, Mike.
And we have Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Gotta love it when the band's back together.
Now, we are doing this on Friday, the 18th of August. And the news has just come out that there's been another change at the national level in the White House group of advisors, with Steve Bannon leaving, fired, resigning. The details will be coming out over time. And one of the things that I think we probably should touch upon is how, when we're trying to look at what's happening in Palmer, Alaska, the Mat-Su Valley, the state of Alaska, with all the other stuff that's happening, how dominating from a national level has the tweet storm, is the only way I can say it, caused a kind of, how do we say, even describe it, difference than any time in my lifetime I can experience as we look at an ongoing, essentially soap opera. I think it's safe to say that. But I know that two people here have been out of the state. Most recently, Zaz, you've traveled to the heartland, to Chicago. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of the perspective from outside of Alaska on what's happening, or are we so far out here that we just don't have the same ability to see?
Oh, geez, I think that it's impossible to predict the soap opera going on in D.C., regardless of the state or city or not city you live in. No, I mean, I was in Chicago for 4 days, so I didn't really get in. And went to see a White Sox game and Billy Joel concert, so I didn't really get the pulse of the nation.
Envy.
But it's a great city. Had a really interesting conversation on the train with a guy when we were in South Chicago, coming back from Guaranteed Rate Field, former Comiskey Park, and he was talking about the kind of the relationship between the races in Chicago and how still divided it is, and kids are bused from what would be their closest school to a school in a different neighborhood where they don't know anybody, and they're always on the defensive, and there's problems everywhere, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Okay. Well, of course, there were the events that occurred last weekend in Charlottesville, and then more significantly in many people's opinion, it turns out, is what has been said about what happened there. Whether it's the President of the United States, the mother of the young woman who was killed, whether you're a GOP politician, a Democratic politician, whether you're a business person who is part of one of the two groups that the President has assembled to assist with business issues. Most recently, the entire Arts and Humanities agency, the official agency, resigned en masse. And the swirl feels like the president is losing many of the supporters that he once had assembled. And there have been significant changes. The most recent, of course, Steve Bannon, who's been an advisor in various capacities, who has been looked upon as, in some cases, by people, a dark eminence in the background, the shadow president, whatever. But it was announced that he's leaving. His last day is it's today, I guess, or he's gone. And I'm wondering just quickly around the panel here, what are your senses about this? Let's start with Terry, because she seemed to have a couple of ideas.
Oh, I think you should end with me. You know, I think it's, I definitely am not unhappy with him being gone. I don't think I think pretty much most people, even people that are, some people that are supporters of Trump or not, don't think it was the right person to be there influencing the president who doesn't need any more influencing at this point. But I'm not sure because, you know, he has long arms and he's walking out of the White House with a briefcase full of 6 months of being in the White House. And I sort of see him as, you know, sort of Trump's drug dealer in conspiracy theories and admiration. And I think it's hard sometimes for people. They may not live in your house, your drug dealer, but they're not far away if you're still not really ready to recover. And so I'm not going to be convinced that this makes a huge difference until I see some difference in Donald Trump. I think that's going to be the telling point. And I think Bannon is going to go back to Breitbart and what he's been doing. And he could be even more powerful than he was before because he's got way more information than he did. So I, you rarely see somebody leave the White House that leaves with less power. They usually walk into something pretty good. So for those that think that he'll be on a street corner with a tin cup looking, you know, for money, for support, I think he's probably going to fall into something very good for himself, but not so good for the rest of us.
Okay. How about Mark? You haven't said much yet.
Well, it has been announced that he will return to Breitbart, so he will have the bully pulpit of, you know, that kind of a media outlet. It will be very interesting to see how that plays out as we move forward. But I do agree with what Terry said. She made some excellent points. But I think the biggest thing is I don't see this having a huge impact. I think it will. It's sort of like a window dressing. You know, people who pay attention at that kind of level, you know, will have a strong opinion. But I don't think, you know, in terms of everyday news and what people pay attention to, I don't see it being on a lot of people's radar.
Okay. Zaz?
Mark stole my word, window dressing.
Ah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are still Breitbart associates on the White House, high up in the White House staff. That influence is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the news cycle starting at about 9:30 when I had other work to do, so there may have been changes. I still don't know, maybe you all do, exactly, you know, was he fired? Did he resign? I guess what, there's a 2% chance that he's leaving before his president does? Or is the chief of staff just cracking down on the image of the White House? And,
mm-hmm.
and maybe Bannon wasn't that happy to be working with him at this point anyways. But no, I thought this is a nice thing about going last. Both Terry and Mark made excellent points. And I think there are plenty of people who are celebrating Steve Bannon's departure from the White House. But yeah, I think that the point has been made that his presence is still very strongly felt.
Yeah, and I think also you have to look to see what happens with Congress, because that's been sort of some excuse for Trump not getting along with members of Congress and working together to get the agenda of the GOP, you know, furthered. And so if there, I think there'll no doubt be people in Congress that say that makes us feel better. We're going to be, you know, have a better relationship. But again, I think it's just a matter of wait and see how those things develop. Beyond today.
And who comes in and to replace him?
Mm-hmm.
If anyone.
Any ideas?
Mm-hmm.
If anyone, true.
Well, let's bring this topic set to Alaska, and in particular something that will allow, encourage Zaz to begin with. Today, as I reviewed the various media sources across the state, I found myself drawn to the Alaska Dispatch News. And as I read through the variety of articles, I realized that I was learning things that I probably didn't have another source for, because many of the topics that are covered that are both local to Anchorage or in some cases about the rest of the state were there in a form that had been reported on responsibly, in the sense of people getting a lot of the detail. A case in point was the video that many people have seen of a kayaker who was saved by bystanders, other people that were there. A very, very persuasive, I think, video to remind people how dangerous things can be and how it's important to be prepared. What I found was, though, that reading the article that appeared, gave me another sense. I wasn't just watching this thing happen, but I was reflecting more about what had happened. And I think that's been the value of having written materials available this way, that I could take my time and read them. Many people have heard that there are changes coming to the Alaska Dispatch News. Bankruptcy proceeding ongoing as we speak, as well as new buyers in the wing, and a lot of questions about, well, what will happen to the state's only statewide newspaper. Zaz, you're going to have to go first on this.
Well, I wish I could answer the question of what will happen to the state's only statewide paper, because I can't. And I think that's been, for those of us who work for the paper, we don't know what's going to happen to the paper. And that's, I'm being completely honest, there are certain things I can talk about, and there are certain things I don't know enough to talk about here or to anybody. But today there is a continuance of a bankruptcy hearing that started Wednesday. You know, we didn't even know we were in bankruptcy till over the weekend. I landed at 1:30 in the morning en route from Chicago and saw that my paper was in bankruptcy and we had new owners. And that was the first I'd heard. And I don't know that a lot of people knew that much, you know, maybe a few days sooner that all that was happening. And so now the issue is whether the deal proposed by the Binkleys, an acting publisher who is very well respected in at least my news circles, Jerry Grilley, whether that will even, the proposal that Alice Rogoff has suggested will fly with the trustee overseeing all the creditors involved, and with a judge. And so today at 1 p.m., there's a fairly important bankruptcy hearing. At this point, at least, we are paying our newspaper carriers, which is always good. And so the next decision is whether we can pay ourselves. And the biggest decision, in part, is a printing press, ironically enough, that Alice Rogoff purchased a new press. And meanwhile, we're printing the papers at our old location that Alice needed to sell in the old Anchorage Daily News building that GCI purchased as part of Alice's sale agreement with Anchorage Daily News. And so she sort of has two presses, one she's evicted from and the other isn't usable right now. And so we really are, our albatross is a printing press, which is a terrible and completely perfect metaphor. Right.
So are the presses part of the sale?
The housing for the press was part of the sale. She has to move the press out of that building. That's part of the deal.
I thought they already made a deal with GCI on rent for a couple months.
To keep it there. But she's getting it.
What about the new press?
That. The new press has issues with the floor and other problems and back payments.
Is that included in the sale?
No, that was a separate business decision.
So what I'm hearing right now is that many employees of the Alaska Dispatch News were perhaps not aware of the depth of the financial difficulty.
No, and I can't speak for my coworkers, but you know, I started seeing hints in reporting on the lawsuit that had been Tony Hoffinger, my former colleague at Anchorage Daily News and the founder of Alaska Dispatch. His dispute with Alice Rogoff was the first sort of insight I think most of us had to what might be coming down the road, but it had it was the tiny little tip of the iceberg, you know,
so realized since. So there's one buyer, you know, as you said, the Binkley family from Fairbanks.
And Jason Evans.
Yeah. Last newspapers.
Right. So is there an opportunity for even another buyer to come forward? Because I know there was a buyer that just bought up the Juno Empire.
Morris sold almost all there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is there still an opportunity for someone else to come in?
That's part of the issue of the bankruptcy case. Mm-hmm. It's being argued by the trustees that because Binkley is an insider now, considered an insider, as a debtor buying the paper or at least investing in the paper, that makes that proposal more problematic and also can complicate other bids.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because now Binkley has a stake in the paper. And so the Binkleys, I should say, have a stake in the paper and therefore aren't maybe gunning for the lowest possible value because they're starting already starting
the highest,
to invest money in the paper.
Possible.
Well, they want to pay as little as possible, right?
Right. So, right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mark, maybe a couple of comments, particularly since you were the publisher of a local paper, The Frontiersman. More broadly about something that has been discussed and referenced in all of the articles, which is the increasing difficulty that print journalism has of making enough money and finding the sweet spot that will allow a paper to continue.
That's right
on
the struggle that the industry is going through now. And certainly at the local level, it is maybe somewhat of an easier go for newspapers, but things have changed so much in the last 10 years. I mean, really near-term, big-time changes. And I don't think anyone's got the answer yet. Surely Alice Rogoff did not have the answer. And there were, you know, many people, when she stepped in and bought the paper, they saw the price and wondered, you know, what's going on? Does she know something we don't know? I mean, it seemed to be a common perception that she overpaid for the paper. So who knows what kind of thinking went into it at the beginning, but it sure did not take a very long time for it to get in a bad state.
So could it be argued that it's still a viable business, but the fact that the mismanagement of not only the person that bought the paper, but also had no real journalism background could have really been the, you know, sort of what took it down, I suppose? Because it seems like, I mean, there are papers that are doing pretty well, and in fact, they're doing better than they were doing in bigger cities. Do you think it could be argued that but maybe it's a combination of everything, but I just find it really hard to believe that the only statewide newspaper can't make a go of it if the right person isn't at the helm. Because I know I lived in a time in Anchorage where there were two. And again, there's a lot of change, as you said, not just 10 years, but the 40 years I've been here too. But the viability of one paper that serves all of it, I just can't believe that that's not a viable thing in this state.
Especially when they have a printing press to help. You know, there are fewer and fewer operating printing presses in the country. There's very few here in Alaska. And the commercial print side of that business goes a long, long way in subsidizing the print side. So I would add that as a potential aid to profitability, although a printing press comes with a whole lot of expenses too. But just the fact that there are few of them here and only a couple in Anchorage that have the capacity that they do, they don't quite have a monopoly on commercial print, but there's more than enough business out there to sort of subsidize the rest of the operation.
Okay. Well, let us segue to another topic, to ban or not to ban. That is the plastic bag. Tuesday, this past week, the Borough Assembly, to show the importance of this topic, for those who might wonder, the Assembly spent I felt like two-thirds of the meeting, a couple hours, listening to testimony. A lot of people very passionate about a plastic bag or tax or a ban or the rest of it. Terry, I know that you were there. You were sitting beside me.
Barely recovered.
And how about summarizing for those listeners that somehow have not been able to grasp the importance of the plastic bag ban? What went on?
Wow, I think Zaz should do that. She can probably summarize better. I'm still sort of overwhelmed by the whole thing. Assemblymember Doty brought to the board discussion, basically, because it was an ordinance to be entertained by the assembly to put a 10-cent tax, which is always an unfortunate choice of words, but how it had to be done, to basically big box stores, so anybody over 100,000, to tax them for every bag that people use, to encourage people to use recyclable bags, as a lot of other communities done it, or, I don't know, countries like Ireland in 2002. There is an acknowledgement that just about across the board that plastic bags are not good for the environment. They're not good. They don't look good. They're a mess to clean up, and they fill up our landfill. But just the word tax brought out probably a third of the people that were there, because that just puts ire in them. They care not what it's for. They're simply convinced that the borough is just looking for revenue no matter what it does, and that it's got enough revenue and it's not spending it wisely, and why should they pay more, even if it's a by-choice thing, which stymied me, because it's not a tax levied on everybody. It's just people that choose not to bring their own bags. That didn't seem to resonate with people too well. But it was a good presentation by a group that I think has done a really good job getting out into the community. They've
with a
surveyed.
Terrible name.
Terrible name. What was I forget now? What
Plastic
it was.
Bag Committee.
Yeah, it was terrible.
The Zero Waste
yeah,
Coalition.
It was
very Korean.
Yeah,
North Korean.
It was really. But they surveyed 1,500 people. They showed up at events. There was seemingly lots of approval for it. But at the end of the day, even though it's not off the table as much as George McKee tried to take it off the table by postponing it indefinitely, it was postponed to talk more to the cities who seemed to have the most heartburn with it. And try to come back December 5th with some type of a something that they could look at. What do you have to add, Zaz?
Well, I found it interesting that there were I agree with Terry. I think that was a good analysis and a good summary, that it was the word tax and its connection to the borough that was the problem. You know, you got to wonder if Fred Meyer and Kars suddenly started charging 5 cents a bag or 10 cents a bag. And people would complain, but just the level of the conversation, it wouldn't be this ideological, philosophical heartburn over it. I think there were some problems maybe with the mechanisms, but a number of people, heck, we don't want to pay a bag tax. A ban, I could get behind a ban.
Yeah, so that was
and
sort
the
of
borough can't legally
right,
do that.
That was
right?
an interesting point that yeah. was brought out that I think a lot of people didn't understand. And once again, Attorney Nick came up and explained to them, because of their second year or status
class authority, yeah,
they could not do that. Although the cities could do it, which and even if
which
the
I
cities
guess
do
might.
It, they might. But then now you've got an unlevel playing field
yeah.
because there's lots of businesses outside.
Three Bears would benefit certainly,
right? So now
although
you don't,
10 cents a bag, yeah,
right. So you know it like I think it was pretty much everybody agreed that it probably wasn't ready for prime time, and Dr. Doty made a point of that, was to say, you know, we have to look out of the health and safety of borough residents. This, to me, is a health and safety issue, also an economical issue. And I wanted to start the discussion, and that's why we're having this discussion today. So hopefully now the borough will get with the city, sit down, figure out what it is. And, you know, maybe they levy a tax where the cities get to keep the tax, and it's just, you know, across the board to all merchants, and it doesn't pick out just $1 million merchants. So we'll see what they pound out. It's yet to be told.
Yeah, there is a town hall meeting in Wasilla, I think at Wasilla City Hall on August 24th.
Right.
To talk about, you know, residents of Wasilla and how they feel about this potential bag tax or even a ban.
Mm-hmm. So as you traveled with us most recently and Mark
yes,
earlier.
Yes, I was going to make a point about Chicago, actually.
Go ahead.
That when we were in Chicago, may have been later at night on a chips run and hands full of products trying to get out of a 7-Eleven and realized that we didn't have a bag and the clerk had gone someplace else. And she said, well, I have to charge you for a bag. So I didn't even ask. And it's 7 cents a bag there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice number.
So I guess that, you know, people either ask for bags or assume you don't want one because you don't want to pay that extra 7 cents.
Was it a paper bag they gave you?
It was a plastic bag. A plastic bag.
Mark, did you have any bag experiences as you traveled?
No. No, can't say I did.
You stayed off the bag.
And I will also confess to being, you know, spending days and days and weeks in an RV. We looked forward to those bags. We used them for trash bags inside and for things like scoop and poop outside.
Yeah.
So At least we're getting a second use out of them.
Okay.
Well, I think that's interesting. I read a study on Ireland, actually, about this after that, and that was one of the concerns that people had, is they wouldn't have plastic bags for those type of things. But the Irish have sort of figured it out with paper to be able to do those things, too. So,
and I do wonder if a lot of the people who oppose the bag tax bring their own bags to the store, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think it was – I heard very few, although there were a few, which was sort of funny to me that – you know, over my cold, dead hands, will I give up those plastic bags I want to take out of the store?
One of the best arguments, or the funniest arguments I heard, was somebody that it was interfering with the private sector who could be making bags to sell. And I think the point was made that nobody has made them not be able to do that at this point at all. There has always been the ability to do that. So maybe this would enhance their ability to sell those. And they are quite cheap, too. I mean, the whole point is zero waste is what we're going for here, is to have nothing in the landfill. And ironically, I just want to say that the next thing that the borough voted on was $7 million for a new cell at the landfill, which last time, if we remember a lot, 10, 15 years ago when we did this, I think it was $10 million, and it ended up in a lawsuit by the time that landfill was in, that cell was in. And that's not something we get to choose to do. We just have to put a new landfill in, cell in, because it's filling up. But the connection to those two things just didn't seem to quite. And that chart, that's the city's too. The city's paid a dump there too. So we're all paying for that. So it was, I was time to put it to bed for a while, but hopefully they'll come back in December with something.
And with maybe better numbers instead of the extrapolations they're using. And
yeah.
People pick those apart. Like,
a number of people with financial background have said, where are the numbers? We can talk most broadly about this, but if you're really going to be saying, this makes a difference. What is that difference? What are those numbers? What and those seem to be missing.
Yeah, and they are available. There are, you know, there are methods to figure that out from landfills. How much is plastic? And they did have a number of what they just.
It was 2-3% of the landfill is plastic bags.
Right. Yeah.
But that's just one part. Well,
but then the 21 million bags used in that zoo every year was a pretty broad extrapolation.
I think
national averages.
Yeah, and the hunting
yes,
argument.
Yes, the hunters didn't find bags in their moose's stomachs.
Because they were in Casilla.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I've been looking at the numbers, the minutes that have gone by since we began, and we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Terry Snyder. Thank you, Terry.
Have a good weekend, Mike.
I really want to thank Zaz Hollander.
Hopefully the word tank isn't in our conversation about the paper next week.
Yeah,
no,
really.
No. And I also want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming in today. Thank you, Mark.
Good to have everyone together again.
Okay, we'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.